Hello and welcome back to the WealthFest podcast with me, Marty Guilfoyle. The health, fitness and wellness podcast brought to you by WealthFest and their presenting partner, KBC. I'm so excited to be back for a second series. We'll be speaking to another incredible lineup of industry experts, hearing their inspiring stories and motivating us to move well, eat well and live well. This podcast, supported by KBC, is just one of many health and wellness resources available on wellfest.ie to help you on your wellness journey. With thanks to KBC, we'll be tapping into a wealth of knowledge with our guests to empower even more people of all ages to prioritise their health, fitness and well-being. Now, let's dive into this week's episode. Michael James Wong is a leading voice in the modern mindfulness movement, founder of the Just Breathe community and app, a community activist, yoga and meditation teacher, speaker and author. Welcome, Michael. So great to have you on. How are you doing?
Hey, Marty. Thanks so much for inviting me. Pleasure to be here.
It's so great to have you. For our listeners right now who might have no idea about you and what you do, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks for that space to do that. As Marty said, my name is Michael. I am a meditation teacher and guide here. I'm based in London, but originally from Los Angeles, California. And I spend a lot of my time building communities and being a part of communities and really celebrating what it means to be together. And, over the years, my work has taken me to many places around the world. And I guess for me, it's always been about how do we create these strong moments of connection in the real world and use practices, quiet practices, meditation, mindfulness, yoga, conversation, writing, all of these things to really elevate the way in which we can really, live in this world in the best possible way.
I love it. And tell me, when and where did this, say, meditation journey begin?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. If you had asked me 20 years ago, it wouldn't have been the road that I thought I would take for myself. I mean, I grew up in Los Angeles where things are a bit faster, perhaps, mm-hmm. and things move a bit at a bit of a rapid pace. And I was always lucky to be around kind of similar types of conversations or classes and things like this, but it just never went. But it was one thing that as I got older and as I moved away, I moved to Australia for a few years, moved to London about 10 years ago. It just became something that I found I needed a way to deal, cope, or find space for my own health and well-being, for my mental health, or just for my, personal sake and sanity. And, I was very lucky at an earlier phase in my life, and this is probably 15, 16 years ago now, to be invited into an event where, everyone was offered to just sit there and be still for a little bit. And it was miserable, right? That first time. It was, and granted, I'd done this once or twice before growing up, and I had experiences with neighbors and friends. But I remember profoundly when I was kind of in my early 20s, I was like, why am I here?
Yeah.
And you're just sitting there going, it's just like watching paint dry.
Yeah, it's not really something you associate with your 20s at all or late teens, is it?
Yeah, and everyone around me seemed to be having a great time. Everyone else seemed to be getting it. And granted, to that point, everyone was probably a bit older. And this is maybe, dare I say, before the wellness, mindfulness boom in the world. So it wasn't like it was in every yoga class, festival, summer thing. It was actually, a bit harder to find around, the back alley down the hallway. And you just end up in kind of what feels like a YMCA with some desk chairs and someone saying, hey, just sit here for a moment and it's all going to be worth it.
Yeah, sit here for a moment, do absolutely nothing. And like you talk about starting at such an early age, something that really interests me is how did your friends take to this? Because I could be wrong in assuming that they probably weren't, interested in it as well, or were some of them interested at that age?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably, I would hope to think I have a fairly relevant stereotypical story where, I did kind of get a chance to try all these practices in my early 20s. I mean, I wish I had started younger, even when I was a teenager, would have absolutely loved it. But yeah, I mean, when I was younger, it was very much about having friends who wanted to go out. They wanted to go to the pub. They wanted to go to have some fun. They wanted to go to a festival. They just wanted to spend their time doing things that weren't this, or they just wanted to be doing things. And these practices were the antithesis of that, right? They were about doing very little and just being present and clear and calm. And so I didn't have a lot of, let's say, friends that wanted to go with me. But what I did find was there was a lot of friends to be made when I was in those new spaces.
Okay, I love it. Now, I am someone who would love to get involved with it. I've done it the odd time, very poorly, might I add. So I say there's a lot of people in the same, you know, situation as me right now listening to you talk about it, and especially because you started at such an early age and you really got involved. Like, there are a lot of myths and rules around it, like, you know, you have to be sitting in a certain way and not thinking about anything. You know, how do you teach it to people who are skeptical of the practice? And in your opinion, like, what are the benefits of meditation?
Yeah, I mean, you come at it at a very common perspective, and it's an honest perspective to say, look, you know, this is something that you find challenging, something that's new. And a lot of that comes from just the way that we were raised, the way that we were socialized, that you're already thinking that something like meditation, you have to win at, you have to be good at, you have to be successful at it. And that is actually one of the biggest obstacles to this practice, is thinking that there's somewhere to get, there's an achievement to be had, there's a way to do it perfectly or correctly. And one of the biggest offerings that I often share, and maybe one of the biggest learnings in these practices, is that there is no such thing as a good or a bad meditation. It's okay. Just simply the experience and the time, right? And it's about giving yourself a chance to recognize that the value is actually the experience of just being there, even if it feels like you're watching paint dry, even if it feels like it's not working, even if it feels like it's the most wonderful 20 minutes of your life. It's actually just about the fact that you're there having a present and clear moment amidst whatever else is going on in your life. And we actually can feel and find the value from sitting down for a little bit of time, eyes closed or eyes rested, that afterwards you have this beautiful after effect that allows you to feel awake, alert, vibrant, calm, rested. And so what we need to do is remove the expectation from what a meditation should be, remove the need for achievement for what happens in a meditation practice, and really just start to recognize that in our lives, having moments when there's nothing expected of us, when there's permission to not do or to achieve, has huge value. And we don't need to try to draw a linear line between I'm here and I need to get there through this practice.
Gotcha. And hearing you say it like that makes it just seems way more broad in my head. You know, I feel like the kind of meditation that I have attempted to do, and the reason why I say attempted is because before even hearing you say that, I figured that I was doing it wrong, was usually before bedtime. And any of the stuff that I was listening to while I was meditating tended to, you know, it would put me asleep and I'd wake up the next day feeling refreshed. But the bit that I struggle to do is, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's people in the same boat, is taking the 15 minutes, 20 minutes out of the middle of their day, you know? Like, when would you tend to do your meditation? Do you have a specific time that you do it, or is there even a good time to do it? Or is it literally just a case of going, like you said earlier on, you know, just giving yourself that 15, 20 minutes at any time of the day is going to be beneficial?
I mean, this is a great chat to have, and hopefully for people listening, anyone who's interested, there's some value here. I mean, if I was to make a bumper sticker or a slogan t-shirt about this, you'd start with saying any time is better than no time. Mm-hmm. But for those who are looking for a bit more guidance, I think the best way to consider meditation is you want to use or practice meditations perhaps the same times as you would drink coffee, the same times you would reach for a meal, right? So with a lot of practices as well, it's also good to clarify for a lot of people, and this is where the challenge comes up, is that meditation is a practice, or it's an approach to stillness. So it's quite vast, right? It's a bit like, if you think meditation is like the vegetable aisle of your supermarket, right? You know that area is good for you, but if you have no idea,
stay away from it, right? Don't you?
Yeah, you kind of wander and you go, oh, I know this is good for me, but if I have no idea, you kind of go, well, I'm just going to wander somewhere else where I know what I need. Yeah. But when you get into the vegetable aisle, you might go, oh, broccoli, right? Oh, peas, oh, corn. And you might go, what do I do with these things, right? But at the same time, you might know, wow, okay, well, I really love broccoli, but tomatoes are not my vibe. And so what tends to happen is people generalize vegetables as good or bad, as opposed to you need to investigate which flavors you like, which ones and how you want to cook them that work for you, and which is why there's so many different techniques and types and styles of meditation practice. And it's important for people to understand that you might have had a really gratifying experience with one style, and that might be watching the breath or being focused on an intention or using a mantra. But at the same time, you might have had a first experience where someone just told you to think about, you know, the color green for 20 minutes, and you might go, this just is miserable. And it doesn't mean, that you don't get value from vegetables or meditation. It just means maybe try something else that is a bit easier or a bit more tasteful for you. And it might be, you know, use this music as a guide to soften your thinking mind. And so really for me in this instance, which is important for me to share, is make sure you take time to learn specific techniques or an understanding of the types of practices that are out there, and not just put it as one big thing like meditation, right? The same way as people go fitness. Well, fitness means a whole lot of things, right? So does wellness means a whole lot of things. So does fashion, right? You know, most people don't go, I like fashion, or they don't. They go, I like fashion, but I like this, or I like music, but specifically I like disco, or I like hip hop music. Mm-hmm. You know? And this is for me is maybe the great ambition I have with these practices is to maybe open a few more doors so people start to find their way in, recognizing there's different ways to come into these practices, knowing that whatever's on the other side is valuable. We just need to get you through the door.
Yeah, I'm already having it like more of an open mind to it now, just by you telling me and like associating it with everyday things, you know, that would be a little bit more familiar with me. I'm kind of like, okay, well, meditation seems to be so broad. I'm sure there's like a little niche in it that I can find that definitely suits me. And when it comes to like meditation, like is there many props involved? Like, do you use anything extra other than, you know, your mind and yourself when it comes to it?
Yeah, I mean, classically, a lot of people might think that there's certain ways you need to sit when you meditate. You need to sit on the floor, you need to sit cross-legged, you need to be of a certain kind of position or purpose. And in some styles, that's absolutely necessary and absolutely valuable. However, when we look at this in a modern world, in a real world appreciation, we have to also recognize that, like it or not, our physical bodies, for most of us, aren't designed to sit cross-legged on the floor. And inevitably, if you prioritize your physical comfort in a meditation practice, what you're doing is prioritizing away from the mental ease or the quietness that we can find within or inwardly. And so the way that I always offer it is find an incredibly comfortable seat where your body is not the priority. Does that make sense?
Okay. Can you explain that a little bit better? Because you want an extremely comfortable seat where your body is not the priority.
Yeah. And so what I mean by that is if I'm sitting on the sofa, I'm most likely to be more comfortable than sitting on the floor. And if I'm sitting on the sofa comfortably, whether it's cross-legged or my feet are on the floor or they're outstretched in front of me, it just means that I'm not going to be so attentive to, my left knee is just feels a bit like I'm twisted in the wrong position, or my back feels a bit stiff and shoulders, right? Mm-hmm. I have something to lean against you. I have something that's supportive underneath me. Mm-hmm. And straight away, I'm deprioritizing my physical comfort because I've already given it to myself. Because for most people, we're not comfortable sitting in stillness for 20 minutes on the floor. I mean, we're not comfortable sitting 20 minutes in stillness anywhere for a lot of people. So why give yourself more? It's a bit like, you know, maybe in a year or two from now, Marty, if you have a regular practice and you get into it, you go, great. Well, now I'm going to give myself more discipline. But it's a bit like, let's just start with one thing at a time. And if I start with realizing that meditation and these quiet practices are valuable for your health, your well-being, your mental health, for easing the mind from stress and anxiety, pretty much that whole list, none of it says, you know, how tight are your shoulders, or are you comfortable sitting cross-legged on the floor? It's inviting us to move inward away from the priorities that we put on physical comfort. So give yourself the benefit and make that easier for yourself by being incredibly comfortable.
Yeah, Mike, you're making me feel better now for doing my very first session lying down in bed before I fell asleep. Thank you so much for that.
I honestly think sleep and meditation are linked. And the reality is, you know, if your body needs rest, oftentimes it's conscious rest, which we call meditation, or unconscious rest, which we call sleep. And oftentimes the greatest thing we can do is put ourselves in the position where both are available and allowing yourself to have a little bit of that trust within ourselves for us to recognize which we need at that moment and kind of taking your foot off the gas and letting, you know, letting everything else just run its course.
Yeah, literally just letting your body do what it needs to do. I love this. I'm really enjoying this now. I feel like that I'm going to have to be giving this a go now from tomorrow, or else I feel like I'll be letting you down. let's look into the Just Breathe events that you had in London. I'm sure those experiences are really missed, obviously, after the year we've had. But tell us a bit more about Just Breathe and the community you've built.
Yeah, thank you for that space for it. I mean, Just Breathe started almost 4 years ago now out of the, let's say, the need for people to recognize how valuable these practices are and can be in the real world. I've spent the better part of the last 20 years as a student, practicing as a teacher, but in maybe a smaller closed door environment, whether it's a yoga or meditation studio, whether it's traveling to different countries or cities to share in spaces where people are already bought into these practices. And so Just Breathe was about taking it out to the real world and creating spaces in community where people could really feel welcomed, knowing that it was just a space to be, and a space where it was not about what you do for work. It was just about who you are, a space for human conversations, gentle interactions. And, you know, it was very much about how do we create moments where people can step outside of their regular routines and have this kind of real world experience of what mindfulness is. And so when we launched it, it was launched as a community event in East London. And I was hoping that maybe 20, 30 people would come. I had invited 20 or 30 people who are all my friends. And so it was this sense of course, like, I just hope my friends come to.
Just for that, just to get that picture up on the gram and be like, people came.
Like, people were there. and it was one of these things. It was free. It was like all these little things of like, let me just take down every barrier possible to try get people in a space to listen to some live music, to hear some spoken word, to have some conversations with some other people. And what ended up happening is that first event, I was hoping for 20, 30 people and 350 people showed up.
Wow.
Funnily enough, maybe only half of my friends I invited showed up.
And you're like, and they're not my friends anymore.
I was like, you missed out.
Yeah.
But the beauty of it is actually there was such a need and a hunger for this type of space that I didn't even realize. And just by spreading the word saying, you don't need to look like this or be like this or have this job or come from this space or this community. It was great. People were coming in suits and ties. They were bringing their babies and their dogs. Amazing. People were bringing their grandparents. It was just, hey, come in and you know, it was a bit of like spoken word, music, meditation. Mm-hmm. Right? It was probably like spoken word, music, meditation, and, you know, a chance to kind of spend some time with some other humans. And from that kind of created this momentum of people who really took it on their shoulders to say, hey, we need to do this more. We need this to have bigger moments where these can expand. And over the years, we have then since grown these events to have upwards of 1,000 people. We've taken over the British Museum.
I love that. It sounds so, it's like we stormed it. We took it over.
we stormed it in a way where we had these opportunities to really create big moments of quiet in cultural places of relevance so people could actually see what their hometown was like,
yeah,
what London was like. Maybe how it was originally designed to be experienced, right? A beautiful museum like the British Museum or the Tate Modern, completely empty and quiet, and only sounds were intentional. Music that was performed was resonated through 1,000 people in the way that people really wanted to listen to it. And, you know, and I've been lucky in the sense that we've taken the project all around the world, through the US, through Australia, through Europe, and put on lots of big and small events where it was just community-led, where I like to say it will likely be the most uneventful moment in your whole day or in your whole week, in the best possible way.
It's such a funny way of putting it. Yeah, it's like you're going to do absolutely nothing, but it could be the best part of your week at the same time. I think, Michael, it's such a compliment then to look back to your very first one where you were expecting 20 or 30 people and you had 300 plus people show up, especially somewhere like London where everything is go, go, go. You know, like I feel like when I think of London, I think of busy, you know, and I think of people don't really want to take time out because it is such a busy city and people do want to continue to do well. And sometimes I think people are afraid to kind of take their foot off the gas because, I don't know, I think from my point of view, I find that even taking that 20 minutes, it's almost like a fear of getting a setback. You know, I feel like, oh, I could be progressing during that 20 minutes in my career, or I don't know, it could be exercise that I could be doing. And, you know, for someone like me who has that fear, and I know a lot of us do from talking to my friends, you know, what kind of advice would you give to someone like that?
Yeah. I mean, again, it's a very common way to look at it. And oftentimes this perspective comes from maybe all of our upbringings of thinking that life moves in a forward direction. Mm-hmm. And when we look at these practices, whether it is coming to an event like ours or whether it's just sitting for 20 minutes in your own house on the sofa, it's one of those things that we have to recognize that if we think actually in the realities of our lives, the greatest commodity that we have is time, right? And this is where this kind of fear of missing out comes from. Mm-hmm. This, if I don't do this in this time, I'll miss out. But we have to recognize that in order for us to use our time with great value, we recognize that all of our decisions on how to use our time come from the way that we think, right? The way that we choose to use our time, right? Because we choose to use time. And that's a paradigm I think we have to also recognize, that time doesn't happen to us. We make conscious or unconscious choices of how to use our time, even if we're watching Netflix, even if we're hungover in the morning, even if we're doing all kinds of random things, it's still a choice, most every case, of how we're using the time. Mm-hmm. And so in doing that, if there is something that can actually help us sharpen the mind to be as clear, as decisive, as purposeful, as meaningful to choose how to use the time, then in a lot of ways, we can't afford not to have practices like meditation or mindfulness or quieter practices that actually support our well-being and mental clarity. And so maybe the metaphor I'll give you, which is maybe one that's really helpful in this context, is that you have to think that you as an individual, and I'm just going to say you, Marty, in the context of our company, you, Marty, are a car, right? And you can choose however you want to look, however you want to drive, however fast you want to go, wherever you want to go, right? You can be, you know, you can be the Lamborghini or you can be the old big Jeep that sits across the road, right? And you might go, well, I live in the fast lane. I have a lot to do. I'm really successful. I want things to be done. And that's totally fine. These practices are not to pacify your life, right? Meditation is not about telling you what you can and can't do in your life. Mm-hmm. The practices are about putting gas in the tank, right? And so if you think that 20 minutes of meditation is you saying, I'm actually going to go to the gas station and fill up the tank. Mm-hmm. And so now I can drive however hard I want, or as however long or however slow I want. But if we don't have things in our lives that restore us, if we don't have things and practices in our life that give us a sense of well-being and decisiveness and clarity, then ultimately you're going to run out of gas at some point. And no matter what you do, you'll slow down. Rest will be given to you, right? And so this is the way that I tend to look at the practices and share the practices, that you may think you're missing out, but what you're doing is actually elongating the adventure.
We just spoke about your events earlier on, about how you've expanded them to like 1,000 plus people, but you do have a Just Breathe app now. For anyone who's listening right now who wants to get involved, what can the app offer for our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, The Just Breathe app is an app that we have recently expanded as a way to really create first door openings into these practices. It is something that you can download typical places, but there's daily meditation practices, which for someone like you, Marty, really helpful because it gives you a lot of variety. It's a bit like every day I'll show you a different vegetable, and it's a bit like a guided meditation or a focused intention. or a music meditation or a breathing practice. And it allows you to have an experience every day of something new. So you can start to recognize which ones you enjoy, which ones feel good for you, which ones you don't like. And then it allows you to use the big library to go back and find the ones that work. We have a very simple, personalized one that just has beautiful music, sets the timer, and just guides you. And the app is developed as a way to extend our community so that anyone around the world can really feel a sense of belonging by just stopping for 10 minutes a day. Mm-hmm. Every practice on there is under 10 minutes, except for kind of the classic one. And at the same time, it's something that is available for everyone to dive into.
So it's literally a case of where you can just set 10 minutes a day. Out of 24 hours, you could hop onto this app and 10 minutes a day is essentially a recharge. It can literally start off as little as that.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's great about it is that it's a two-part app. It's a free app that you can download, and there's a series of meditations that you can access completely free that just allow you to have it as a support tool. And it's always important that even with products like these and projects like these, there's elements that obviously we offer so much more, but on a very functional, basic level, it's a supportive tool for your mental health and well-being. And in doing so, we've created a project and a program that goes with it, which is called the Just Breathe RX program, which is a clinical and a medical support tool where doctors, nurses, therapists, clinicians, nutritionists, people of medical or professional certification will have the ability to prescribe the app as a support tool for mental health. And so if that is you and you feel like this app could be really supportive for you, speak to your doctor, speak to your therapist, speak to your nutritionist, speak to your social worker, and let them know that this program exists, because all they have to do is register themselves and then they can prescribe it for free, complete full access to the app as well. So it's our way to really support those people who are supporting all of us.
And it's amazing because as someone who's encouraging, you know, people to like take time out of the day, you seem like such a busy guy. You know, we just talked about your app there and you are now an author as well. The date, I believe, is May 27th for the release of your new book, Sen Bazuru, Small Steps to Hope, Healing and Happiness. I hope I pronounced that right. Did I?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, people often think that I am a busy person. And the reality is I just have great people around me. You know, a lot of the projects that I'm involved in, a lot of the things that we do are all in the spirit of the project, that they're community led, they're built from the inside out. But you know, this book was a project that came out of lockdown purely by nature of the world shifting, my agenda changing, mm-hmm. my schedule changing. And, I just had a very honest chat with my publishing team, and they just said, hey, we just think that there's a space for something really simple, gentle, hopeful in the next kind of 12 to 18 months. And so this is the journey that I went on for a few months last year, bringing this book to life, which is just a collection of short stories, poems, meditations, proverbs, as a way to really show people that there's so much there's so much that we can find in the gentle nature of being human and slowing down and really just leaning back into all those life lessons and universal truths that we've all collected along the ways. And it's really anchored within and around the paper crane, which is kind of this universal symbol of hope and happiness.
And would it be safe to say then that the pandemic inspired you to write the book, or was it something that you always had, you know, a dream to be an author one day? Or was it a case where it's kind of like, look, you know, like you said, the world is shifting. I could have some extra time on my hands. Let's put this to use.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a perfect collision of ambition, no, a perfect collision of kind of ambition and opportunity, as well as space to be able to navigate through this conversation. This is actually my second book. My first book came out 3 years ago, which was called Sit Down, Be Quiet. This book,
I love the title.
Yeah, thank you. And this book follows that similar trajectory of creating more access and awareness to mindful practices in a way that people can really understand it in a very simple way. Again, we use the metaphor of folding paper cranes as a way to invite a sense of well-being and slowing down in our lives. And, you know, I always had hopes to write more books. It was just something that came, you know, at the right time and in the right shape, and came to life this way. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing how people feel about it when it comes out. And
yeah, due to be released on May 27th. We're looking forward to it as well. And you said, you know, sit down, be quiet. It was released 3 years ago. So if we go back to teenage Michael going, you know, to his first meditation, did you ever, if someone told you back then that you were going to be an author, would you have believed them?
No, absolutely not. I mean, it was never in the roadmap. It was never kind of one day I'll be a meditation teacher and then I'll be an author. You know, let's say childhood hopes and dreams were definitely along other lines of, you know, things you dream of when you're from LA. and, you know, it's really nice to be here in this space. And, you know, this is where it's at. And I'm totally happy with how things are. And looking forward to see what unfolds from here.
And where would you like to take it next? You know, you mentioned some of the places that you've been already with this journey. You know, when the pandemic ends and we can freely travel without quarantine and negative tests and all that, like, is there a location you have in mind that you'd like to go to first?
Home. When I say home, home is for me is wherever my mother and my father is. My parents live in Los Angeles. My first trip, or one of my first trips, hopefully will be to visit, which I haven't seen them in, you know, a good 18 months. Oh, well, but okay. At the same time, you know, I'm usually on the road somewhere between 10 to 20 times, cities, countries a year, just traveling, sharing, teaching in some way. And so I'm looking forward to kind of spending time with a lot of the other communities that are very dear to my heart. I'm in Stockholm a lot. I'll be in Copenhagen, Melbourne. I'll be in Dublin a few times this year. Mm-hmm. Or New York and US. And so, you know, really it's just about reconnecting to all the different communities I've been lucky enough to be a part of over the years, and just having the chance to, you know, to be face to face to people, to hug and high five people, and see what it's like to sit across the table and have a chat that requires no technology.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say at this point, you know, Zoom has your head done in, does it?
Yeah.
What part of LA are you from, actually? Do you want me asking?
Yeah, I grew up in Santa Monica, California, so a few blocks from the beach.
Oh, lovely. Okay. So, and then when you compare it to some of the other cities you've been to, you know, is LA, because I've been before, but I was only there for a couple of days, you know, is LA as busy as, you know, as it's made out to be online?
It depends. I mean, from my perspective, it's not, because I grew up there. And so, oh, you know, all the places that people might think are busy, or all the situations that people think are fast paced, you either know where they are and you got to go the other way. Or I guess if you grew up in the rhythm of LA, it's just not as fast as what people think it is. So one of the most endearing things people find about when they hear I'm from LA is I didn't actually own a pair of socks till I was about 25. just because, you know, you live in sandals and barefoot for most of your life in the sunshine. So, you know, every place has its, you know, joys and amazing things. And every place has things that people might look on from the outside thinking it wasn't for them. But ultimately, everywhere in the world has something really amazing to kind of dive into, especially when you get connected to the people who live there.
I think that's one of the most random facts I've ever heard about anyone I've ever spoken to, that they didn't own a pair of socks until they were 25 years of age.
You know, just walk out to the beach or put some sandals on, or, you know, just slide them in a shoe and go.
It sounds like the dream, to be honest. I know I've learned so much from speaking to you already during this episode of the Wellfest podcast with KVZ. You know, is there anything that you can give our listeners to take away with them before we let you go that might help them start their meditation journey, continue it, strengthen it? You know, what would be, say, your three main takeaways for people listening to us right now?
Yeah, let's do this. So for anyone who is starting a meditation practice or just interested in exploring what it might be like to do a bit less, number one, I'd say do one thing at a time, not everything all at once. It's very easy to think, okay, I'm going to start meditation. Now I'm going to download this app, and then I'm going to get this cushion. Then I'm going to buy these socks. Then I'm going to call Marty and ask him for his tips. So one thing at a time, even if that just means every day before you wake up, put on a piece of music and just listen to the whole thing before you get up, or before you go to bed, when you put your phone down, just say, I'm going to count back from 100, right? These are just little mindfulness techniques that we can do that's very helpful, and things that you can figure out for yourself of how do I intentionally just take a moment? That would be one. So one thing at a time, not everything all at once. The second thing I'm going to say is the best way to start anything, especially with these practices, is just to stop, right? Don't just jump and go, right? And the best ways that we can really feel value with anything is to pause and have a moment and to lead from experience, right? And that leads to my third point is just try, right? Because so many people quickly jump to trying to be good, that the best thing you can do is just try. Even if it is 20 minutes of misery, closing your eyes and just sitting there feeling like the paint is drying and, and nothing's happening, that's still 20 minutes that you're not on the phone, 20 yeah. minutes you're not arguing with, you know, your best friend over who won the game and who lost the game. It's it's not 20 minutes when you're trying to do 7 million things. And so we must recognize that just trying and having the experience and having the time is the first best step towards finding your way into these practices.
I think the putting the phone down for me is definitely the hard one. I have this fear, Michael, of if I put my phone down for 20 minutes, I'm going to miss something. And then I tell you 99% of the time, when say I'm doing this podcast right now with you, and I can't check my phone for 30 to 40 minutes, when I do check my phone afterwards, I realize that I actually miss nothing. Like...
And actually the extension of that, and this is kind of what I would call like a brutal human honesty, is in that time you've missed nothing, and in the nicest possible way, no one's missed you, and that needs to be okay.
Oh, thanks, Michael.
I say that with a lot of love, right?
No, you know, I know you're joking.
Right? No one's missed you. You haven't missed anything, so be okay with the fact you've just had a moment.
Yeah, no, I love that. I really, I've never been told before that nobody's missed me and actually enjoyed them hearing it. So thank you for that.
I say that with a lot of love, Marty.
I was actually, before we do let you go, I do need to let our listeners know where they can find you and keep up to date what you're doing, because like this chat has opened up my mind to it more than it definitely was before we spoke. But I was on your Instagram recently, and one thing I will say is I love the quotes. Like I love them so much. Are these yours? Do you come up with these?
Yeah, so all of those little things I share on Instagram are what I call little gentle wisdoms or little words of wisdoms that come from a lot of my time as a teacher and sharing these practices and just hopefully shaping them in a way that makes sense for people. There's a lot more that you'll find in the book that's coming out. It's just a way that just seems to resonate for me in a way to share. And I really appreciate you saying that they're relevant for you.
Yeah, no, they really are. So if people would like to keep up with them and keep up with yourself, where's the best place people can find you to keep up to date with your journey?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Michael James Wong. I do have a website, same michaeljameswong.com. There's not much on there other than random photos of my face.
Well, that's most people's Instagram, so you're...
Fair enough. But I mean, what I'd love to point you in the direction of is our Just Breathe app, where there is a beautiful free trial that everyone can have full access to. Likewise, there's justbreatheproject.com, which has a lot of articles, videos, extra ways to consider, as well as the Instagram itself at Just Breathe. So Just Breathe or at Michael James Wong literally will end you in a way where you'll find a way to connect with me.
Michael, thank you so much for joining us on the Wellfest podcast in association with KBC. And from a personal point of view, thank you for making me realize that meditation is way more broad than I thought it was. Even with the reference to vegetables, like it's amazing when you kind of like dumb something down for someone who has no idea about what you're talking about, how amazing it can be for that person. So from a personal point of view, thank you so much for broadening, you know, my opinions on it. And then for all our listeners' point of view as well, I'm probably going to be thanking them on their behalf too for joining us. So thank you so much for speaking to us, Michael.
Oh, amazing. Thanks for having me, Marty. We'll make sure that we'll get you set up on the app completely so you can give it a whirl and see what you think and eat your vegetables.
I really appreciate it, Michael. Thank you so much.
All right, guys. Catch you.
You've been listening to the Wellfest podcast with me, Marty Guilfoyle, brought to you by KBC. Remember to check out wellfest.ie for more free health and wellness resources. See you next time.